expansion on universal correlation functions in rank 1 SVFT. This is this is in collaboration with Simon Hellerman, Domenico Orlando, Susanna Reffert, and Chunsky Maida. By the way, I'm from Montcalvoli at PMU. So let me explain the large charge expansion. So strongly coupled theories are difficult, but interesting. You will have to think about it because of the Dirac flow, if you want to study real physics, you have to study. And you know, you might even not have a Lagrangian description, or even when you have one, you don't have a small parameter to deal with to have control over physical quantities. So for strongly coupled theories, general semi-classical analysis can be of use. For example, large N expansion. And likewise, when a system we consider has a global symmetry, going to a sector of large global charge J gives us some simplifications. We can then sometimes analyze strongly coupled theories in a semi-classical regime where the Lagrangian is weakly coupled in terms of 1 over J. So this is the idea of the large charge expansion. And one example of the physical realization will be the superfluid. And so for example, you have the, is that when you take the number of helium atoms large, you can expand the physical quantities of those condensed matter systems in terms of 1 over J, whatever the number of the helium atoms. Because the fluid helium has the O2 symmetry, and you can take the. Okay, so why is the large charge expansion semi-classical? Let us consider a strongly coupled QFT on the cylinder with radius R. Let me write it on the blackboard. So, for example, I'm considering S2 cross R, with radius R, and we give a state large charge density. I'm sorry. Can you see it? You can't. Ah, good. Thank you. Yeah, it's just this S2 cross R. I'm sorry. We have a state of large charge density rho where, let's utilize it. This is the charge density on J, the charge, rho times R squared, which is taken to be much larger than one, with a standard Wilson argument, lambda UV is square root of rho because of, and lambda IR to be the 1 over R, which is the geometry, besides the geometry itself. Now then, we take the limit of rho times R squared to much larger than 1. Small ratio of lambda IR over lambda UV should render the theory semi-classical because quantum correction is expressed. So you can, of course, make artificial counterexamples to this hand-waving argument, but in generic situations, this is what happens. So let me start with the simplest model. Let me try to describe the simplest model of volt to be analyzed at large charge J to show you, the mechanism of the large charge expansion. So we put the system on S2 cross R, again with radius R, and we start with the following UV action with complex UV field, phi, which is equal to, you can expand it in absolute value times the angular field. And you can start from the usual phi-4 action. And this system is the O2 symmetry. And by fine-tuning the value of m squared, we get the conformal Wilson-Fischer fixed point in the IR. Okay? It's the standard argument. But we can add the chemical potential term, omega cross rho, to the action to fix the charge density and take omega to be large. So this is the same thing as giving the absolute value of phi, a large charge dimensionful VEV proportional to square root of rho, which spontaneously breaks the O2 symmetry. So why is it not explicit breaking? Because although you're adding the chemical potential, you can just set phi nu, which is equal to exponential I omega t times phi, and you recover the original Lagrangian with O2 symmetry. So it's just spontaneously break, So now chi the flat direction becomes Goldstone boson of the theory, from which we can construct the effective Lagrangian at low energies. All right. I don't have any questions. So then scale everything far below lambda zero, which is lambda UV, which is proportional to the square root of rho, and then the IR Lagrangian. Oops. has to be classically conformally invariant because quantum fluctuations are suppressed, which come in positive powers of lambda over lambda UV. We will not care about the dressings and quantum corrections because this can be done systematically. So we can, after all, you can only consider classically conformally invariant Lagrangian in the IR. So all the tasks, therefore, has reduced to listing all the conformally invariant operators according to the J scaling. So
what happens if you start with a conformal theory in the first place?
In the flat space, can't define the charge at all, so I don't know.
Sorry.
What did you ask?
So you start with a non-conformal theory here.
Oh, yes.
In the IR, you have what if you start with a conformal theory?
Oh, I see. I thought you said flat space or something. It doesn't change much. It's the same thing, right? Because why is it different? I see.
Because you seem to be throwing out operators. You're just saying some of them are going to be sort of...
Yeah. But you can start the UV CFD and fix the charge, you know, flow to the IR. It's just the same thing.
I thought you were starting already with the IR fixed point. I mean, are you turning on the charge in the IR
or two? So you have to fix the VEV of the field, which.
So you are starting with
UV, some UV action. It can be UV CFT. Mm-hmm. It's just that the UV CFT and IR CFT are not the same thing. Yeah. Okay. I'm considering the Wilson-Fisher O2 fixed point, but you know, many theories can flow to this model. So, for example, the Phi-4 theory, and so at large charge, some Suzy theory can flow to this Wilson-Fisher O2 fixed point. So, I will now give you the leading order O2 invariant IR Lagrangian, which is, you know, here, which is also classically conformally invariant because of the argument I gave you a bit ago. So, what I mean by classically conformally invariant is that you respect all the classical scale invariants, dimensional analysis. And if you set the renormalization point to be so that A has a unit kinetic time, so this expression doesn't exactly make sense in that expression, but you know, you just shouldn't take this seriously. But so if you take the renormalization condition to be the unit kinetic term of A, you have this Lagrangian, because the mass dimension for A is 1/2, where the mass dimension for partial is 1, mass dimension for chi is 0, because it's the angular pair. So it's the only thing you can write down, at leading order. So, and you have the high derivative terms too, right? Well, much better, you can integrate out the field with masses of order square root of rho, you can see that, resulting in, just some coefficient times absolute value partial chi to the cube, which is the only thing that's allowed by all the symmetries in scaling dimensional analysis at leading order. The solution to the equation of motion, so because you're considering the case with, so if you, the Lagrangian, this is the phi field, the Lagrangian is like having the phi to the potential barrier that's proportional to phi to the sixth, so that, you know, given the absolute value of phi, the large dimensional VEV is that the lowest solution, or the solution to the equation of motion, this leading order Lagrangian, would be chi zero is equal to omega t, because it's helical. You know, this direction is chi, so it's helical. It must be helical in time. By virtue of the Noether theorem, we have rho, which is equal to this, and j, which is equal to that. So rho is proportional to partial chi squared, which is proportional, which is equal to omega squared. So obviously, omega has to go like the order square root of rho.
So what's b of chi?
Oh, b of chi is some coefficient. That's determined by the UV theory, but that's theory dependent.
Okay.
So when we separate chi, the angular field, into Vevin fluctuations, we have this leading order Lagrangian. So you can just, leading order Lagrangian was, leading order Lagrangian was b of chi. So you can just separate it in Vevin fluctuations, you have this Lagrangian. So immediately you can see that this breaks the Lorentzian symmetry spontaneously because of the speed of the Goldstone boson. It's the speed is 1/√2. So the weird coefficient in front of it is that you want to set the you want to set chi fluctuation to be order 1, not order root j or something. So rules to sort operators of large j is the following, because we want to write down some leading terms about a j. After integrating out the A field, you're free to put its mass in the denominator of each effective operator, which is, in this case, absolute value of partial chi. Do you remember it? The scaling of partial chi is proportional to square root of j, because the leading order the solution to the equation of motion is proportional to square root of j. Also, you have higher derivatives of chi, which is proportional to j to -1/4, because of the weird factor in front of it, you know. So because chi zero, which is equal to omega times t, vanishes upon acted two or more derivatives, this reduces to the fluctuation of, just the fluctuation part, which scales as j to the -1/4. It's just a rule. One more rule to remember is that you can use the equation of motion for leading action. This, can you actually see the color? Can we use the eliminate operators, because that can be traded for something of the lower j scaling. All right. So you can sort operators at large j. What's easy to do is to sort operators larger than order 1. So order j to 3/2, you immediately, or you know, you trivially have this operator partial chi to the cubed, and order square root of j, obviously you have Ricci times partial chi. But this is not well invariant, so you can well complete it by some subleading operator. So these are actually the only operators that appear at or above order 1. So if you want to write down the IR Lagrangian at the Wilson-Fischer fixed point, this is the only thing you can write down. So some theory-dependent coefficient times partial chi to the cube times some theory-dependent coefficient times Ricci curvature times partial of chi, you know, and all other vanishes at large j. Okay. So we're now in a position to calculate the operator dimensions at large charge. You know, you can just—it's trivial because the classical piece is just given by, you know, some theory-dependent coefficient times j to the 3/2 plus some theory-dependent coefficient times j square root of j. It's just the result. So by the way, this Wilson-Fischer universality class includes SUSY models, like d equals 3, n equals 2, and cubic superpotential model at large R charge, And this means that the lowest operator dimensions at large R charge are far above the BPS bands. So instead of saturating them. So the Casimir energy, you can compute the quantum corrections too when the Casimir energy from the leading order action goes as order one. You know, because the fluctuation Lagrangian was written as follows. Again, this breaks the Lorentz symmetry spontaneously, and the, you can systematically compute the contribution to the Casimir energy by using the Coleman-Weinberg theorem. So, yeah. So this is of course divergent. You have to regulate, renormalize the sum, for example, using zeta function regularization, because you're on S2, it's the easiest thing to do. But it's actually a bit tricky. You can sometimes naively use zeta function regularization to get to the wrong result, but there is certainly a way to correctly compute this, which is minus 0.094, which is a some definite number. So this is the universal prediction, because there are no operators available at order one. So this can be the only contribution to the dimension of this order. So we therefore get dimension of lowest dimension of the lowest operator at large charge J to be like this. Okay, do you have any? Okay. So by the way, you can also compute the dimensions for the all the operators, for all the operators, one above the lowest one, which can be which can be easily written down. Spin L, the energy of the excited state increases by L times L plus 1 over 2. Because, if the speed of sound was 1, the same as the speed of the light, it must have been L times L plus 1, but it's 1 over square root of 2, because So this is the conformal ratchet trajectory for this effective field theory, and the spin L equals one state. Spin one state is the descendant, because if you plug L equals one to it, it gives one, and it's the descendant of the ground state. The lowest state, lowest operated large charge, as required by the conformal symmetry. So others are just new primaries. But so the fact that the speed of the Goldstone boson is 1 over square root 2 rather than 1 times the speed of sound, speed of light, therefore, follows directly from the conformal symmetry. More specifically, the existence of descendant demands that you have the speed of sound to be 1 over square root 2 instead of 1. Okay.
So these are states. So we fix a very large charge with the ground state, and you say the ground state energy is given by the formula on the previous slide. And these are all the...
Yes, all the... yeah. Sorry, yeah. What I say is the... So... What I say is that... This is the lowest operator. And you have the O1 excitation above with various spins. Specifically, the spin one state is the descendant of the lowest state. Okay. Okay. So N equals to G equals to 3 is Z theory with superpotential, a cubic superpotential at large R charge is in the same universality class too, rather surprisingly. In this case, there is no moduli space of vacua, which makes the theory line the same universality class. Specifically, in this case, superconformal symmetry fixes the fermion's mass at order root j instead of 0, which is called massive Goldstein. Then you can integrate the fermions out because it's massive, really heavy. You can get the same effective field theory as in the non-Suzy case because it's just comprised of the bosons. What? Okay. So when there is a moduli space vacua, the story is totally different, and I will talk about this in the latter half of my talk. Okay. Because there obviously exists the BBS operators. So to make sure we didn't make any mistakes, let me show you a few numerical results to back up a formula from two other groups and ours. So one, the authors calculated the lowest operator dimension at fixed charges up to j equals to 10 and see if our formula fits well. The other, the results actually suggest remarkable fit down to, even down to j close to 1. Also, in another paper the author calculated the lowest operator dimension up to j equals 100 using large N technique. So this theory, if you use this rule, this theory is dual to the CP1 model. So you can use this large N technique by promoting it to CPN model. So and this even recovers a universal prediction of minus 0.094. So let me show you the first result by Benjeri, Chandrasekharan, Orlando. So this is plotting the lowest dimension for the operator, the dimension for the lowest operator, fixed charge Q. This seems to fit really well with our formula, using that. And even down to j equals 1, it seems to fit really well. So I don't think they prepared the graph with error bars, but I don't know, it's not our fault. So I'm sorry, yeah. I don't know. but it fits really well. So you can do it using large N technique, as I mentioned before. This is the order one contribution to the dimension, the lowest dimension, which quickly reaches minus 0.094 at large Q, large charge. So there are various ways to check the result. Sure, okay. So by the way, it's clear from the construction that the straightforward numerical bootstrap program slows down at larger charges. And analytic bootstrap should be interesting, but not exactly parallel with analytic bootstrap at large spin, because the theory is not going to be free at large j, at leading order. Instead of, at large spin, the theory reaches the generalized free field, a free theory, but it's not going to happen because the dimension scales of j to the 3/2 instead of j. Recently, Jafaris, Mohamedov, and Zhivoydov have put out a nice paper studying large J bootstrap, so it could be interesting to study it. But So basically it shows that the effective field theory we drive is the only possibly effective field theory when there is only one rigid trajectory. And there are far more possibilities in the spectrum if you allow for more. More than one rigid trajectory. So
you're saying if you assume that there is only one leading operator?
Chi, especially. Yeah, so if you just assume there is only chi field, it's guaranteed that you have this effective field theory at leading order. It's very natural because it's the only operator you can write down. You don't even have to use bootstrap to see it, probably. It's great that you can use bootstrap to prove it. So let's move on to supersymmetric case. Smoothie theories can have moduli space of vacua, and in those cases, the large charge analysis is totally different. Most importantly, the leading order action is just a free theory, free Lagrangian, as opposed to the case without the moduli. This is because the flat direction of the theory is the entire multiplet, as opposed to just the angular field, chi, as the previous cases without moduli. For example, you have Coulomb branches. The effective action, therefore, preserves supersymmetry. This restricts the effective action all the more compared to the case without supersymmetry. Susie helps. So one example of this type of theories include d equals to 3 and e equals to 2, w equals to x plus z model. Here you have the moduli space of vacua. On the x branch, the field content of the effective action is just x, or x to the 3 over 4. Phi has the unit kinetic term. And you can write down the effective action in terms of 1 over j scaling, where, the absolute value for phi scaling is square root of j. and the anomalous dimension. You can compute the anomalous dimension of the lowest operator. You know, you can write down the effective action, but it's going to be like free Lagrangian plus some something scaling as 1 over j to the cubed. So it's very, it's really constrained than the non-Susy case. So the anomalous dimension of the lowest operator that receives quantum corrections is going like minus c over j to the cubed. Why minus sign? C is positive. It's because of causality, and the it's because the action here has terms like partial phi to the fourth. So because of the usual, usual causality argument, you are bound to have negative anomalous dimension at large charge. But this is this kind of indicates that the in quantum gravity you have the you always have the attractive force of the gravity. You know. Right. So let's now move on to g equals to 4 and equals to rank 1 SCFT. And instead of the operator dimensions, here I would like to compute the two-point functions of operators in the chiral ring, which is one-dimensional. Coulomb branch chiral ring, which is one-dimensional. First of all, complex one-dimensional. First of all, they're independent of any d terms because the two-point functions preserve some Susy. And so we can only care about f terms. They're highly constrained because there are so many supercharges, you know. It was really constrained for four supercharges, and it's all the more constrained for eight supercharges. And actually, there will be no F terms, subleading F terms, aside from the Vis-Zamino terms. Okay. So let me prove it. The symmetries we use are an equals to Susy, U and R symmetry, and the conformal symmetry. They transform the field living on the one-dimensional Coulomb branch like this. So rho is the wild transformation, gamma is the U1R transformation, and you can promote sigma into chiral multiplet whose scalar component is sigma, then the symmetry of the theory becomes baryonic. So in that you transform both phi and the background field appropriately to get the real symmetry. So background fields coupled to phi are background metric, g mu nu. Oh, I'm sorry, so I'm considering 4D, and background metric g mu nu for the wild transformation and the background gauge field a mu for the U and R transformation, respectively. It's just standard on. So now to tackle the baryonic symmetry, you can pick a convenient gauge, which is the, which is set in the, the scalar component of phi to a constant with other components, with all other components vanishing everywhere. So you can choose sigma x to be log of phi over mu, and you can set phi to mu, I'm sorry. Okay. And we have turned on background fields, g mu nu and R gauge field in trade.
Don't you have also S2R?
Yeah, but we're considering only the lowest.
You don't have
to care about it. Yeah. So let us only consider the background R4, or what are conformally equivalent to that, like S4, or S3 across R. Then the wild tensor is obviously vanishing. The R gauge field fluxes also vanishing when we only consider maximally supersymmetric background, which can be assumed by varying gravity, you know, it's the standard argument. We therefore can only consider terms involving the Ricci curvature and its derivatives and the flat R gauge field because the flux is zero. And we only have one field, phi, on the Coulomb branch. We thus have four building blocks in the effective action, phi, phi bar, g mu nu, and a mu. This term must be scalar, while invariant, while weight two, R gauge invariant, all the more chiral. And it's of the form, you know, like this. Where, you know, R is a scalar, while weight zero, R gauge invariant, and chiral. So you can try to construct I, but out of A mu only, You can only construct Gaussian variant combinations out of this flux. But it's vanishing on R4, as I've already explained. You also have Chern Simons term, but it's, you know, just you be dressed with phi squared, which is not Gaussian variant. Out of G mu nu hat, which is phi squared times G mu nu to the match dimension, match the scaling, which is not chiral, we can only construct things made of the Hatchett Weil tensor, because it's Weil invariant, you know. But since Weil tensors are Weil covariant, things out of the Hatchett Weil tensors are just the, you know, just the same as ones created out of the Weil tensor itself, original Weil tensor itself, and this vanishes on R4 or S4 or something like that. So the combination of them are possible. They only reduce the multiplication of the above two, and hence vanishes. I mean, you can construct R mu hat, but this is not chiral. So we therefore conclude that there are no subleading F terms in the effective action. Okay. We'll agree. So is this the effective Lagrangian just comprised of the, does this mean that the effective Lagrangian is just comprised of the free one? No. Why? In four dimensions, instead of three, you have to add the Vesmino term to match the theory's Weil and U1 anomaly. This is essentially of order log of phi over mu, which goes as log j. And this is bigger than any possible subleading terms present in the effective theory. Because phi goes like square root of j. So the only candidate for the complex axial dilaton, which comes into Vesmino term compensating the anomaly mismatch, is log phi over mu, because you have only one field in the one branch. To compensate for the anomaly mismatch, the term goes like alpha times Vesmino Lagrangian, where careful matching of coefficients tell you that this, alpha is this. So if you have the table of A anomalies in for a Jiris Douglas series, you can compute alpha. So I don't even want to tell you what the form of, you know, the Vesmino term is, but you can work it out. It's very agonized, but you can do it. So I've been agnostic about the definition of phi up until now, but we'd like to consider rank one SFTs and calling the Coulomb branch generator O, whose dimension is delta O. So we will define O to be some coefficient times phi to delta O, so that phi has a unit charge on whose kinetic term, we demand that its kinetic term to be unit normalized. So for example, in Lagrangian theories, NO is equal to square root of imaginary tau. Okay. So now we would like to compute the correlation function like this. O bar to the n times O to the n. But this is equivalent to computing phi to j, phi bar to j, phi to j, where j is equal to n times delta O. And this can be computed by inserting operators in the path integral, which we call Zn. Lagrangian is, as I've already explained, you know, the free Lagrangian plus Vesmino Lagrangian, which is proportional to alpha. But what, you know, I have redefined alpha hat to be alpha over j to you know, scale all the whole Lagrangian, you know, to be scale the whole Lagrangian to be to j, because in that, if you do that, j becomes a loop counting parameter, like h bar. The structure of Q1, which is log Zn, is as follows. We just separate the field into Vevin fluctuations as we did before. And we'll compute the connected vacuum diagram, because source terms are already in the action itself. So you can just compute the vacuum contribution. The number of loops L counted by 1 over j to L minus 1, which is the loop counting parameter, well, number of vertices M counted by alpha hat to M, which is alpha hat is equal to alpha over j. So we also should not forget about the most important alpha times log j term from the classical Vesmino action itself, but so let me show you some example of diagrams at order 1 over j. So there are diagrams with two loop with no alpha vertices. And there are two diagrams with one loop with one alpha vertex, which are these, a tree level with no two alpha vertices. So these come from the Vesmino term, and these, you know, Vesmino term, and this comes from the expansion of the action into Vefner fluctuations. All right. Okay. So putting alpha hat back in, we see that Q1 is represented by an infinite sum like this, where free means just the Wick contraction of all, you know, just the result for the Wick contraction, plus the alpha times log j, which is the which comes from the Vesmino term, plus the expansion in 1 over j, and the mth order expansion of j contains only the m plus 1 order polynomial in alpha. You know, you can see that here. So at order 1 over j, you only have alpha square term plus alpha term plus order 1 term. Like, you know, and likewise, you can diagrammatically see that this is the formal expression. And the free correlator is given by, you know, the result for the Wick contraction, which is this. And, you know, this can be expanded into a class A like this. So these are Bernoulli constants. So A and B are convention dependent or theory dependent. So for example, if you scale O to be some, you know, O, you know, if you change O to O to 2O, A is going to change, but you know. And so now you know how to compute Qn, the results should be only dependent on alpha because the Lagrangian was just plus alpha times Vesmino. So it should only depend on the theory's A anomaly. Difference of the A anomaly between UV and IR. But this is not this is in theory true, but you know, it's universal because of the vanishing of its abelian F terms. This should in theory be end of the story, but it's difficult to conduct calculation in practice because it includes, you know, computing the Feynman diagrams infinite times. How do you do it? So because of the structure of Qn, it's possible to determine everything using a countably infinite number of alpha as reference points because there are only countable infinite number of different coefficients. And you can prepare them in Lagrangian theories with a marginal coupling tau. And in those theories, it's known that Qn satisfies the Toda equation, this. So examples of such theories include the free theory, which is alpha equals to zero, and equals to full super Yamils with gauge group SU2, which is alpha equals to one, and n equals to 2 SQCD with NF equals to four, which is alpha equals to 3/2. So it's also possible to prepare infinitely many such theories by adding infinite numbers of matter hypermultiplets and ghost hypermultiplets at the same time to balance the beta function. So now, because of the structure of Q1, however, it should only depend on tau, like power law, at large n. So that's the prediction from effective field theory, and you can exploit this fact to solve the Toda equation exactly. And the result would be this. At large, you know, plus some non-universal corrections. But you know, which goes as exponential of something. But we are again remind you that J equals to, in this case, tau is the marginal deformation. So delta O equals to 2, so J equals to 2n, and 1 plus n plus n minus is minus alpha plus 1 over 2, which you know you can expand it in terms of 1 over n and match the coefficient in front of log J. And at order j, you can go on like this. At order 1 over j, the term goes like this. And we can match this with effective field theory to determine n plus or n minus. So let me write it out. what Toda equation tells you. Toda says, Toda, effective field theory, this is the log J coefficient, this is the one over J coefficient. That goes as 1 plus n plus n minus times log J. And so you match these. And at order 1 over J, you can do it. Thus, it says that it's 2n over, 6n. And it's complicated with it. It's something like this, and you want to compute this portion of the expansion in the effective field theory. So by straightforward computation, which is tedious, combined with exactly known results for the correlator in n equals to what Cypriani Mills, we get the one over n contribution as one over two times alpha squared plus alpha plus one over six. This is due to the computation from Feynman diagrams. And we can mash these two. And we can determine n plus and n minus. So plugging these back in, the final result therefore becomes qn is equal to a times j plus b plus log of gamma of j plus alpha plus 1, which is a really simple expression, which applies to any rank 1 theories, including non-Lagrangian theories, because of how we derived it. We only use the marginal theories with marginal deformations as a data points. Okay. This is the result. But BPS ions, by having a large VEF, are integrated out already in our effective field description, whose mass is of order root n. So this should contribute to qn like exponential minus root n, which is a non-perturbative and non-universal correction. You can test this by comparing the result with the exact localization result, like this. So the vertical line represents the second difference. The second difference is, what I mean by second difference is this. Second difference of qn, this line is imaginary tau, and this is, I suppose, SQCD. Yeah. With four flavors. So you can see that the second difference in n for qn, these numbers are n. So if you increase n by, for example, 10, it really, it really matches with the, it really matches with the expectation for localization, which is given by the, dots. And, the lines are prediction from our formula. So you can also see how these differences are governed by the BPS ions, by subtracting these two and plotting in terms of imaginary tau and fixed lambda, which is n over imaginary tau. Because in weakly coupled theories, the contribution should go as n over imaginary tau. At weak coupling, the mass of the BPS ion should go to zero. So, it's a natural combination to consider.
Why do you especially consider second difference?
Oh, because that's the only that's the one thing, which is convention dependent, convention independent, or theory independent. If you take, that's one thing which is physically meaningful, like the OP. So for example, I believe if you take the second difference at n equals to 2 or something, you recover the OPE of OP of Coulomb branch generators, or something like that. So the agreement is quite good ready for lambda, which is equal to this, 3. You know, this is the fit of, this is a fitting, you know, this, this expected error using actual data points. So the operator dimension of the Coulomb branch operator is conjectured to be a rational number by Jiris. So it's always possible to make n and j integers, if you wonder about it, where o of n to be phi to j. So I guess it contains some mistake, but don't worry about non-freely generated chiral rings, but because I don't want to consider those theories. But I guess there are no examples of non-freely generated chiral rings in rank one theories, but I guess there are some theories with non-freely generated chiral rings in higher ranks. So, but I only wanted to consider non-freely generated freely generated chiral rings. So the future direction would be to, so for example, you can, so as I said before, as I said earlier, you can compute the OPE for the, you can predict the value for the operator product expansion in Jiris-Douglas theories in which you have no Lagrangian description. And you can do it from bootstrap analysis. There is a paper by Madalena Lemos doing bootstrap analysis, but you can also you can also use this formula to predict the OPE, which these numbers match up to 2 digits or something. I haven't put it up, but so another thing to do. Now take home messages is that large chart expansion is interesting, makes it possible to analyze strongly coupled theory, like a weakly coupled one. A theory without moduli has an interesting behavior, large charge, starting from an interacting theory at leading order, not generalized free theory. Provide a useful tool to study, for example, superfluid helium, which and has been tested numerically too. And theories with moduli space are more restricted to large charge, and there could even be cases where the splitting corrections vanish entirely, like F-terms. Because of this, we drive the correlation functions between BPS operators universally, only depending on the theory's A anomaly, rank one CFTs. The result is also checked by standard methods like localizations, and future results would include clearing up the logic a bit because, you know, there should be no necessity to use TODA equation. You know, you should be able to drive everything using effective field theory and actually determining the size of the non-perturbative corrections because it's non-universal, but you can probably use bootstrap method to put a causality-like constraint to the size of the non-perturbative corrections. And higher ranks and expansions are interesting too. For example, you can go to d equals to 3, n equals to 4, and you can study the Higgs branch operators there. And there, you have no Vismino terms. So you can probably expect that the correlation functions at large R charge are determined solely by free correlators. But I don't know what. So this is something to check. So that's all. Thank you very much.
Yes, I was wondering, what is so special about n equals 2 and 4D, contrasting to, say, 3D, Suzy?
Oh, what do you mean? It's just that there are many supercharges to constrain F terms to be vanishing.
Is it still true that anomalous dimensions go down with J?
I believe so. No. I believe so. Because, because, you know, alpha alpha is the difference between UV and I are A anomalies, so should be constrained by positivity, you know, should have positivity constraint in unitary theories. So it should have it.
If you want to collect this loop corrections to systematically compute one over J, is it like, so you have some non-relativistic kind of propagators, right?
Oh, where you know, in rank one or no, no, in general. Oh, I see. Yes. Yes. I mean,
so
right.
It's similar to computing loops in these Lipschitz theories or something like that.
Oh, probably. I don't really know Lipschitz theories, so can't. But yeah, the propagation of chi is non. It should be called non-relativistic because it's the dispersion relation is linear. But if you promote the O2 theory to higher O2n theories, O4 or something like that, you have the soft modes, which is non-relativistic because of the Goldstone argument. Non-relativist Goldstones. But they don't contribute to Casimir energies, you know, because they don't actually contribute to Casimir energy. But by coincidence or something, right? It's just.
Any final questions for Masataka? Okay, then let's make the screen.
Thank you.